Welcome.
Welcome to Room 7.
Hi guys.
As you know, Room 7 is the virtual equivalent of an insightful talk with the mates.
Yes,
the
it homies, is.
The homies.
Yes.
And yeah, these are my homies. Let's reintroduce ourselves for those who are not familiar.
Yeah.
Well, I am Miriam Gayuze, or Maui from the Moon, and all my social media accounts follow me. I am a filmmaker, well, film student and poet, everyone knows. And I hope you enjoy episode today, our second episode of the new season.
Yes, mm. Consistency.
Consistency, yes.
Yeah. Shout out. You, Mr. Who are you?
My name is Ryan. Ryan Wolf. Follow me at Instagram. Can I get Save Ryan. Save Ryan Wolf.
Please save Ryan Wolf, guys. Yeah. I joke. Yeah.
I do YouTube. That's pretty much it, really.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah.
In school.
In school. school. We're not here, to talk about school.
Oh, yeah, here to talk about school.
Well, we are here to talk about school, but first.
I am Luya Ndambalentisono. On Instagram, I'm Cosmic Concussion. On Twitter, I'm Luyanda. I don't know if I should spell it on
this,
but you'll find it in my bio on Instagram somehow.
Yeah.
And yeah, I am a CEO of Moving in Silence.
Yes.
So I'm not going to announce any of what I do. Any of the things I do, I mean.
Mm.
So yeah, man, what are we here to talk about?
We're here to talk about educational system. School.
Yes, school.
Ryan's least favorite subject. Topic. Everything.
Oh. Yeah.
But I feel like I just want us to lay down what education is to us.
Yes.
Yes.
What does it mean to you, Leander?
Education is meant to be an enlightening experience.
Yeah.
That's what I think it is. And I think it's a chain of epiphanies.
Ooh.
That are meant to cultivate new ideas or even expand one's knowledge on anything, any study or like one's worldview in general.
Mm.
So yeah, that's what education is to me. What is it to you, mister?
To me, education is a means to an end, really.
Okay.
But not to benefit us.
Hmm.
But we'll dive into that.
We'll dissect that in here later.
We'll get into it.
Education to me, I guess, is an experience. It's really learning more than you knew as a young child,
mm.
I think. And I feel like it's been warped right now in the systematic ways it's taught and how it's structured. It could have been a very enlightening experience, as you speak of, if it was, it was nurturing in a way. And it engaged with every single mind, creative mind, analytical mind. But yeah, we'll dive into that. I just think it's a tool for everybody. It's magic. Just an extension of your mind. That's
yes.
What education is.
Yes, I love
yeah.
that.
Yes.
I came across a quote by Angela Davis, right?
Yeah.
And she says, when children attend schools that place a greater value on discipline and security than on knowledge and intellectual development, they're attending prep schools for prison.
Ooh.
So how do you guys think the education system of South Africa as is right now emulates exactly what she's talking about in this quote?
Well, I mean, she's not wrong.
She's
mm-hmm.
definitely not wrong.
I guess the prison part strikes because
it kind of feels like we're working to become slaves, right?
It's,
yeah. To become workers.
Modern day slavery, really.
Modern day slavery.
Yeah.
I feel like okay, I don't know if you guys have seen this before. You've probably heard it like in a lot of people's TED Talks or interviews.
Yeah.
People tend to say that the education system was initially established to kind of produce factory workers who are efficient at obeying instructions.
Wow.
Without thinking of opposing them or overthrowing their employers.
Mm.
So when she says that it's similar to a prison, it's kind of reminiscent of that, like me understanding where
Ooh,
it comes
yes.
from. And also, it's evident in the way the grading system works in general.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me how 1,000 people can receive the same type of education, but there's only a limited amount of answers that they expected to produce when tested.
Exactly.
How? We all think differently.
You know, 1,000 minds.
1,000 minds are wired differently. We experience things differently. We learn differently, like literally of different learning styles in general.
Yes.
So how can you expect people who are fundamentally so different to now produce the same kind of result?
It's to put you in line, really.
Mm,
it's like, follow the instructions.
Discipline.
It's
have
a
ever,
hiding.
Yeah. It's like on every exam paper, the first line that you see is follow the instructions.
Mm.
It's like, yo, either you do this or you're fucked.
That's pretty much all it is.
That's pretty much all it is. And it's scary for anybody, like, who, you know, as a kid and you're going into like the higher grades, high school, this the environment was way different than it was in primary school. It was more like, it was, I guess it was nurturing for me in my experience. You know, there was a lot of wanting people to learn and wanting people to experience it fully. I mean, there were also a lot of situations that kind of scarred all of us.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, interacting with people. But I feel like in high school, I feel like that's when I saw the true, the darkness of it, you know, the constraint and the structural way that I didn't want to fit in, because I, as a creative person, I didn't feel like it connected to me at all.
Mm.
So I think it's scary to reach that point, and I understand what Angela Davis said. Like, you feel like you're literally in a prison. That's how I felt in high school. So, yeah, that's very true.
I feel like what education has been made out to be, is something that drains the color out of you.
Mm.
Like, it drains, it takes away your personality. Like, it's like a, it's something that was meant to program you to be gray or to be one dimensional or to just
think
and act.
You are forced to fit the mold and not
become your own mold.
Not
morph into your true being, just like align with whatever is required for you in the working environment. Well, prospectively,
but I would like to know, since I kind of spoke a little bit of my experience, you know, I'm just emotional like that. What was your experience like with education in general and just like school? Just the school environment.
You go first.
I want to know all the nasty stories. All the.
My thing is, I get you were trying not to fit in, right?
Yeah, I was not trying.
I kind of struggled with desperately trying to become, for example, one of the bros, one of the homies.
Mm.
That kind of fucked with me, because I always felt like I wasn't really enough.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the thing is, with school, the mental health shit, it doesn't really matter to them, because what they're there to do is to make you do what they want to do.
Mm.
And you couldn't really use any school outlets for
personal gain.
Not so much personal gain. I get that, right? But it's more for like relief.
Mm. Oh, I see.
Like,
I see.
Yeah, there was a fucking school psychologist.
But
she
even
was
then, it was patronizing, because when you go to like the, and it's not a psychologist. I think
it's not though.
Like, basically, when you go there and you tell them your experiences or like your grievances, they would give you information that is meant to get you back in line. Not like for you to understand and get to the root of the problem. No, I'm going to tell you what I need to tell you so you can be, quote unquote, a good student.
A good student.
A good slave.
Somebody who's easy to control.
Yeah.
You know, complacent.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about this, guys, today I'm coming through with the quotes. I found something else by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He said... The function of education is to teach one to think intensively and to think critically. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education. Everything you've mentioned is the complete opposite. Like, I don't think that this is the type of education that we're receiving. Like, in the ideal world, we would be educated in a way that enables us to be individual in our thinking, like to be creative or to be self-sufficient.
Yes.
But if anything, the only thing the education system has succeeded at doing is getting us to conform.
Yeah.
But that's basically
conform.
What we've been talking about this whole time.
Honestly, this is we live in a world where we just have to conform. You
yeah.
know, have to fit in.
Conform or die.
Did I mention my experience? I think
no, you
didn't.
Okay,
what was my experience like with education? It was a roller coaster. Like, yo, my primary experience compared to high school is like two different things. So in primary, I had this mentality that like I can change the world. Like, I can be free. I can color the world pink if I want to, or purple, or whatever. I felt like I was invincible. I think it's because of the type of environment that I was in. Like, in primary school, particularly the school I went to, I'm not going to name drop, but we were encouraged to try to, like allow ourselves to just be us, to
That's
innovate,
beautiful.
To be kids.
That's really beautiful.
But at the same time, obviously, being a black person in institutions that were initially designed for, you know, white people.
Yeah.
Like, we started primary during the time of, like, integration.
Yeah.
Like, I get that it's been the new South Africa for a couple of years, but 2007, 2008,
yeah.
that's when a lot of Afrikaans schools started accepting black students. So there was still that layer, like, of the experience. Okay,
my
fine.
Primary school was originally Afrikaans school. Like,
same
completely.
Same, bro.
Completely white. And then
so,
just,
like, we
yeah.
were the kids, we were the integration kids when they were still trying to figure out how to fit a black child into a system that was designed to educate an Afrikaner.
Mm.
You know? So that was a challenge, like, in terms of the systematic racism that still lingered, you know, and that was something that I'm not necessarily going to blame the school, because black people, we love to complain about, like, not being included in certain things, but the thing is, the party wasn't started for you, like, that
right.
set of, you were not invited,
yeah,
you were just like an extra, you were thrown
yeah.
into
yeah.
it, you know, you're like a plus one, you piggybacked onto it. So I can't really be mad at the institutional racism if the institution wasn't necessarily established to cater to me.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm just going to add.
Yeah.
I kind of had this weird rant a few days ago where I felt like these kind of systematic racism and everything, like, it's right now we're complaining about it. Yeah, we want them to change. We want them to, you know, include us. And I'm like, but they don't care.
Yeah, and the table
exactly.
wasn't erected for you.
Exactly.
It wasn't. If you want a place where you're going to fit in and thrive and be educated in a way that is relevant to your experience on this earth as a black person, you need to go to an institution that was fundamentally established for black
those
kids. Or create them.
Yeah.
Because there aren't enough of them. Because a lot of the institutions that exist now, like the public institutions that exist now, are funded by the government, right?
Mm.
And even then, it's more like,
They're not doing enough.
or they're not necessarily, the curriculums that are in place aren't designed for black kids. It's basically the same things that are being taught in institutions that are predominantly white, but they just give them to black institutions to say, okay, yeah, we're giving you the same level of education,
you know,
but you're not educating us.
You know, this this topic on, like, especially the curriculum, I remember being in grade 12, and we have this English. I loved all my English teachers. Shout out to all English teachers, the best people in the world. So, and she was studying further, like, education. She's like, I want to study so I can change the curriculum, you know, in some way. Because we always complain, like, oh man, why do we have to read Shakespeare all the time?
Yeah.
Why don't we read, like, South African plays? You know,
like,
you
Toni
know,
Morrison,
yeah. Why don't
James
we read
Baldwin.
Black authors or just every, you know, every other race besides white?
Yeah.
And
if you think about it, hapa, like, the schools that were designed for white people built them and prepared them to succeed. But if you look at black schools or schools that are in predominantly black neighborhoods, some of the opportunities that you see there are limited.
Yeah.
For example, like, there's this one school in my neighborhood and, like, the only two sports that are there is soccer and netball.
Damn.
And, The schools that are here, they have soccer, netball, rugby, tennis.
This also reminds me of my boyfriend told me about the school he went to play rugby at, and they had horses.
What the fuck?
And I was like, whoa. And he's like, yeah, it was a white school. I'm like, of course.
Do you see my point? Like, we were forced to sustain ourselves, and we were put into this hole full of poverty.
Mm.
And
like, you know, when you talk about like the poverty element of it, it reminds me of the ghetto experiment that was done with the Jews. It's kind of the same thing that happened during the apartheid regime. Mm.
Okay.
So you know how like the Jews were basically isolated and seen as like undesirables,
right.
And like they received the worst level of everything.
Yeah,
like
if there's
a higher grade in terms of like services and stuff like that, basic services, they didn't receive that. Or basic human rights, they didn't have that.
Mm.
So during the apartheid regime, that was kind of the same thing that was repeated with townships.
Mm.
It's like a modern day, or not a modern day, but like a different version of the ghetto experiment.
Yeah, and that goal still stays.
It still stays. Like that whole thing was created for people who live in townships to like, to kind of instill this mentality of the fact that like they're inferior, or that they don't, they're not on the same level as everyone else. It was a very classist idea, and they got the shorter end of the stick. And that's also evident in the level of education that they received. For example, that's where Bantu education originated.
Mm.
And till this day, even though it's not officially called Bantu education, I can guarantee you, even if like a person like, okay, I'm middle class, right? And I went to a public school. Even if someone else went to a public school, but they're from like a township, the level of education is not the same.
There's classism in
that as well. Even in the public school system, there's no equality.
Mm.
It's like everyone else, like aside from people that are regarded by society as poor, everyone else has like a leg up on everything. Like for a person who is impoverished or grew up impoverished, they have to work 10 times harder
to be on,
on
the
a
same
normal
level. Yeah.
Like not even same, a normal level.
It's a normal level.
Just to
from my own experience in high school, like I'm gonna mention that there was a lot of struggle financially to even stay in school. So that kind of separation that I had, you know, people were more privileged, and there was not always like 1 week where I have to stay out of school because I couldn't pay the school fees. So there were moments like that.
Jeez.
For me. Yeah. I never told you guys that, but there were moments like that. And you see that education is not free, and it's not something, it's built on this capitalist, you know, scale. It's built on just inequality in general, like the one, well, in our system here in South Africa. So I felt like I didn't need it at some point. You know, I felt like this is not for me then. If they don't even care if I have it, if they think just because I didn't pay, then I shouldn't be here, you know?
Yeah.
So there was a whole, that experience for me kind of made me see the true colors that we have in this country.
And if you think about it,
education
itself is a classist idea.
Yeah.
Because, like, it goes back to the point that I made about schools in the neighborhood versus schools in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Like, the schools that were made there were built so that the kids that go to that school stay in that area, and they stay in poverty, and they stay in the struggle. And then for schools in the suburbs, your vision is widened. You have so many opportunities, and you can do anything that you set your mind to.
Yeah.
And
it's sad.
It's really sad. And now I really want people to answer that question. Like, what is it? Well, how do you know you're educated?
Yeah.
You know, and how do you, you know, separate that privilege you have with what you see in, like, you know, in the news, like, these kids have to walk miles and miles to school. Oh, they don't even
have
school.
That was so crazy to me. When I saw that on the news, I was like, why the fuck are they walking that much?
You know,
why?
Like,
what the fuck?
Because of the government.
Oh.
Really, it is, because these things, that education, food, shelter, these things, we should have them for free.
It's a basic human right.
Basic human right. We should have access to this. It's in the institutional thing, you know.
The Constitution.
Yeah, that thing. It's in the Constitution. So it's kind of, it's a weird experience.
I think in South Africa, okay, not just in South Africa in general, in the world, there's certain human rights that we call human rights, but because of the way the world is set up, those things are privileges.
Yeah.
That's facts.
Because of, that's so true.
Like, because of the way the world is set up, certain things are privileges. Like,
if you're in a shithole, you're going to stay in a shithole. If you're in luxury,
you're going to
stay
in luxury.
Stay in luxury.
Or you're going to continue to benefit from exploiting people who are in the shithole. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want us to go back. I want us to look at, like, our experiences of education from two perspectives. From an intrapersonal perspective, which is introspective, and then an interpersonal perspective, which is, like, what we think education is, like, our shared experiences as a society. So I want to start it like from an intrapersonal perspective. What was the experience of education like for you, like as a student? I'm piggybacking off your question. How do you know if you're educated? So I want you to answer that question, but with this question as like backgrounding, to support it.
Okay, let's open up to Miriam's world of education.
Ding ding.
I think I always felt average. Always. Like, even at, you know, all these, like, it was amazing to my parents. Like, you're always invited to the, you know, the awards and stuff. Like, you always got awards. And I was like, Mom, I always got best scholastic improvement. I always improved or just lagged, you know. So it always, I always felt average. And I remember this moment in primary school, because I sucked at math, like, all my life, guys, I suck at math. This is embarrassing, but I don't care, you know. So I remember in seventh grade, and they had, like, all the kids who were, like, failing in the hall. And I think I was doing average enough to not be in there. So my grade six math teacher came to me and he said, oh, why aren't you in there?
Whoa.
No.
And I was like, ouch. That's what he paid for. He's like, I'm like, because I'm passing. And like, dude. So yeah, it was kind of like the weird relationship with it, you know, because I was always average. Like, and I think at some point, I think it was grade 10, like I felt so, I had like severe depression because of it. Like just feeling like I was bad at the subjects or the subjects I was, you know, supposed to do. Because, you know, when you reach high school, like, what am I going to do with my life? You know, you choose subjects. And then I chose, like, the scientific, I was going to be a vet. You know, I had a dream. And then grade 10 was like, dude, think about yourself. Like, what is it that gives you passion, you know? And I loved writing. I loved creativity. So just telling my parents that, guys, I'm going to start doing maths lit. I'm going to do other subjects, you know, business is the easy subjects. And they're like, oh, you're just gonna go on like that, then you're not gonna be, you know, you're not gonna get money in the future, you're not gonna do something that you know, that's gonna bring you, that's gonna make you succeed, you know. Art is not the best industry. So yeah, it was a very, I guess, weird experience for me because I was struggling with that. But I'm so privileged that I got to do the subjects I want, and I got to this point now where I get to study what I love. So I think, yeah, it was a very bad experience, but I got to the point where I needed to be. And that's what I appreciate the most.
So I just wanted to basically, not add on, but like respond to what you were saying. When you spoke about how, like, when you made a different subject choice, when you changed your subject choice, your parents were kind of initially against it.
Yes.
I feel like that speaks to this mentality that our parents had during their time. There's specific subjects or specific careers that they were told bring the most money, like the most income.
That's how they were sold.
And those particular careers are associated with subjects like pure mathematics and physics. And as a result, even in school in general, you can see how kids who chose those subjects are treated differently to maybe art students, because art education isn't necessarily valued as much as, you know, science and all these other things, unless one attends an art school, of course.
Yeah. Also, I want to add another experience, since fun fact, anyway. So in high school, when I was changing subjects, we had this like student teacher, and he was kind of replacing our math lead teacher. He was a math student, like university level. I don't know what the subject name is, but one of those like advanced mathematics subjects.
Actuarial science.
Yeah, that one, actuarial science, I think. So I came, I'm like, I'm changing, finally, I'm happy. And I'm like, please sign so, you know, I can go. And then he's like, he looks at my mom. He's like, come on, you can improve. Just stay, do maths. I'm like, no. And it's weird because he's teaching maths lit. So imagine like just how he even views the students, you know. So
wait,
it's
he
like,
was teaching
maths lit. He was,
but
like,
he was a pure math student.
So he kind of wanted to push forward like that agenda. So it was weird. Like imagine how he looked at maths lit student as he taught them. Like imagine that even the teacher's side of the story. Like I imagine how their experiences are, especially with people who also have the mentality that no, you need to, you know, do this subject. So it's also parents, it's teachers,
It's
that
extra
generation.
Yeah.
Your occupation, just that generation.
I appreciate the teachers, though, who actually allowed you to do what you need to do, what you love, and actually told you, like, this is what you need to do. Like, don't make your parents force you to do subjects that you know aren't going to work.
It's kind of difficult.
Some teachers were like
that. I mean, from a parental perspective, I mean, yeah, you want your kid to succeed and have a lot of money and shit, but, I mean, if you're forcing your kid to do something that they don't want to do just because of the money, don't you think that your kid is going to be fucking sad as shit?
Or even resent you.
Yeah.
If that career path doesn't work out.
Yeah.
What was your experience like? Because we spoke about Maui, now we want to know what Ryan
really want to know about this.
It's more or less kind of how your experience was with the marks and all. I guess it was fucked. I had various amounts of pressure from teachers, from my parents, from and most of all for myself, because for most of high school, I thought of myself as some kind of a fucking failure because I didn't get to the level where I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this thing where I used to compare myself to my friends a lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, maybe I'm not shit because this dude is doing physics and maths and accounting and all this shit. And I mean, I'm doing fucking math lit and CAT and all of these, all of these lower tier, supposedly, lower tier subjects.
Supposedly.
And I'm not where this person is supposed to be. So I'm less of a person. So that was something. And like I said, it was fucked. So
my experience.
How did we move along? But yeah, that's crazy.
I don't think I've ever been more anxious like in my entire life than I was in high school. Like for me, it was pressure. Like it was so much pressure. It started in primary, but it became more apparent in high school. So most of my life, like my relationship with academics or with education was, okay, I'm intelligent, therefore I prove that or I justify that by performing, by performing well, like excellence or nothing.
Yeah.
So when I got to high school, I realized that a lot of my performing well was driven by anxiety or the need to justify or prove my intelligence. It wasn't that I wanted to perform well or that like I had some kind of goal in mind. It was all about satisfying that fear of seeming like I am not intelligent. So I tied it to my results or the way that I was performing. And eventually it became very difficult to keep up with that because nothing was ever enough. Like if you get 80, you could have done better. If you got 90, well, it's not 100. Like it was always something that like could have been improved in some way. And on top of that, I think I had a lot of imposter syndrome. So I always felt like I am not smart. I'm pretending to be smart. I felt like I was an actress assigned a role. And now I have to do everything in my power to make sure that I play this role. So I had to come off as excellent and I had to come off as powerful or as that kid that can do everything. And then when I had a turning point or like that realization that this is just an avatar, yes, you are smart, but you're not smart because of the amount of books you've read or whatever. It's just how you think. And how you reason. Like I only came to that understanding later in my high school career, but by the time I got to that understanding, I was already mentally, emotionally, and psychologically drained from being an actor during most of my
academic career.
I have a question about your experience.
Do you think it was driven by your primary school experience where you're like, you know, the integrated black girl?
No. In primary, I had a superstar complex. I don't know how to put it. Like, I was in
top
my
top of the class, all of that.
Yeah, like, cool, top of the class, yes. But I had this idea that, like, I could be and do anything. And that idea came from, like, my parents or even people around me. I think a lot of what I became in high school was internalized perceptions that other people had, like, oh, she's smart, she's gonna be this, she's gonna be president, she's gonna do 1, 2, 3, oh, she's, I wanna be like her. Okay, well, not everybody, but like some people would actually come up and tell you that. So I started building my personality around this. So I've always had like an identity crisis. There was a question mark. It's like, okay, who am I outside of all these things that people are saying? So a lot of, it's messed up. So I built up my identity around that. So like I would even call myself these things. For example, if somebody asked me, why do you think you're smart? Oh, well, they said.
They said. Mm.
Do you think you're a good student? Well, they said.
Damn.
According to my grades.
According
they
to
said,
my grades.
You know.
I bet you got a lot of slack as well from other students because they thought you were some kind of teacher's pet, right?
I mean, sure, I did. Yeah. I did get a lot of that. And I was a teacher's pet because, again, in my head, excellence. Whatever I need to do to achieve that or to maintain that persona, you know, that's what I'll do.
So what was that fueled by?
Now that I'm older, I realize that it was fueled by a very deep fear of inadequacy that started from the household.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people are middle children, but I'm going to start it from there. Being a middle child, you're not the last, you're not the first either.
Yeah.
You're in the middle, so somehow you need to be noticed. There has to be something.
Right.
You're as independent as the firstborn, but you're also kind of as free and liberated as the lastborn, but you're still in charge of, you know what I mean? You still have a parental role to play on the like lastborn. So you're in the middle, like you don't have a fixed identity. You're either or.
Wow.
So I had to pick something. Like, I knew that I'm somewhat smart. Like, there's something about me. Like, I can understand things. I can hold on to things quickly. So, to me, that was like, okay, that's your superpower. We're going to focus on that, and that's what's going to make you noticeable.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you're going to stand out from everybody else in the house. So, that's going to be your thing. So, I wanted something that's going to validate me or make me important.
That is interesting. Very, very interesting. Wow. I feel like it's so amazing when you see how these things become, how these things build, and just there's so many layers to every single conversation we have, and that's what I love. But that's very interesting. Wow.
I think it does it play on the fact that, okay, I'm a middle child. Now I have to play this role of being somebody, being noticed. Do you think it played? Do you think that was also an aspect of being a middle child too?
Yes, it's definitely an aspect of being a middle child, but it's also a product of, okay, you know how I get that parents don't necessarily have favorites, or so they say. But like, most of the time, there's only two people, like two poles, like two people that get attention the most. It's the firstborn,
mm-hmm.
And then it's the lastborn that get the most attention. But in the middle, for some reason, it's difficult for them to like kind of balance that out.
Right.
You know, because you're the best of both. Wow. So for me, it was also that attention thing then.
Jack of all trades.
Yeah, jack of all trades. Do we ever not discuss childhood trauma? Because this is what it always becomes. We end up unpacking.
Let's not go too deep to childhood trauma. Like, let's get to the solutions.
So, okay. Someone else, guys.
We're speaking about being middle child. Cool.
I'm not a fucking...
I'm not a
No, but
child
we're past the middle child.
Yeah,
yeah, we're not going back there. I'm saying, how do we get out of this?
Oh, how do we get out of this in terms of what? Like, how do we grow from our experiences of education? Or how do we solve the current... Okay, so at this point, we've basically dissected the trauma that was tied to our individual experiences of education. And we've also covered a lot of what we think are the flaws that we saw firsthand, or even the ones that we observed during our education experiences. I mean, experiences of education, rather. Redundant.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I want to know from you guys, what is the way forward? What do you think can be done by the people, by the government, or by society in general to change the face of education, or even to change the inner workings of the system?
Well, you could, I mean, there's the basic shit. Like, you could stop teaching shit that we're not gonna use.
Okay.
There's that. Shit, I don't know. Miriam?
Okay, I know we've been having a lot of conversations about everything in the world, but I feel like there needs to be kind of, you know how they did it with the, you know, the reconciliation thing? There needs to be kind of this conversation, like with actual people experiencing education and really listening to them. Because I feel like they really don't. They just give them what they have to learn and then that's it. But I feel like there's no space for people to really open up about their experiences and to say what solutions they think would work for them, you know? And I feel like that's where it should start. It should just start at the base and build from that. Build characters, build people, and build their minds to be more than who they are, you know?
Yeah.
You know, don't make them feel like they're not enough. You know, make them feel like what they have is enough and they could expand on what they want to learn. Give them what they want to learn about. Don't give them what you think will, you know, make them a slave in this world, or what you think will make them... make them
inferior.
Yeah, make them inferior, you
but
know,
like,
make them slaves.
I feel like you're very right about that. In essence, what I think we're trying to get at is we need to create a society in which there's intersectional empathy. Like, we need to remove capitalism and classism from the concept of education itself. We need to look at it from a psychological and emotional standpoint. When I say psychological, I mean that there's more work to be done in terms of understanding the psyche of everyone, like, and how they perceive education or how they are able to receive information in general. There's so many people that are qualified. There's scientists and neurologists and those are the types of people that we should employ to actually come in with solutions. people have conducted different scientists have conducted different studies on like people's learning styles and people's IQs or how they react to certain types of information. Those are the types of things, that's the type of research that needs to be a part of the solution.
Also,
number one,
I feel like we should stop measuring intelligence
in general.
Right.
Instead of measuring it, we should kind of start
just cultivate it, just bring it out. And it's not, I feel like just let people be. Like, I don't have much to say about it because I feel like there's so much just heavy on people just to be more.
Yeah.
Like, just give children the feeling of being enough. Give them that. Like, give them the mental space to exist. You know, when you talked about the experience of being just, you know, a superstar.
Yeah.
Give them that. It doesn't matter who they are. There are so many different kids out there. There are autistic kids. There are kids who are shy or introverted. You know, there are different minds out there.
Mm.
And I feel like those kind of spaces and those kind of experiences should also be opened up to, you know. They should just be empathy that you speak
it
of. They should
back
be
to
like,
that.
Yeah.
Empathy and understanding and also a willingness to identify differences, not with the intention of making people who are inferior feel like those particular differences should disqualify them from the same privileges that everyone else has in terms of like education. I feel like there's a lot more work that could be done by the people who are given the responsibility of educating us to unlearn a lot of the things that they were taught about education. And also the intention behind education should be changed as well.
Mm.
Because as much as there are a lot of these excellent schools that give so many opportunities to people, the system itself, like the nitty-gritties of the system, still cater to that mentality of Uti, education is meant to create people who are obedient.
Mm.
So we need to go back to the quote that I was talking about by Martin Luther King.
Mm.
Uti, the function of education is to teach one to think intensively and critically.
Yeah.
So we need to allow people to think.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Not try to control how they think, but allow them to think.
Yeah.
And then start actually taking their thoughts into consideration. It even bleeds into the marking system.
Mm.
I spoke about this earlier. You cannot grade 1,000 people in the same way.
Mm.
Like, if anything, you know what I like about certain types of exams, Ne? You know when you're given a case study and then you're expected to analyze it from your perspective and provide a solution that best serves, you know, the case study, that will bring about some kind of change. That is how education should be oriented.
Yeah, I like
it should be based on innovation and forward thinking. There should be a problem, like in every class, even like as a general lesson, the educator should present a problem and then give the students a task, like give them the responsibility to try to dissect the problem and see what they can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to cultivate creative and independent thinking. That's just one way to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, we're talking about mental health.
Yes.
That should be a study as well. As much as people are able to implement religion, like let's say a school is maybe Christian or Muslim or whatever, they're able to have assemblies and stuff like that. The same type of initiative should be taken with mental health. LO is not enough.
Mm.
Yeah.
It
yeah,
is not enough.
Not.
We need actual psychologists that teach you how to cope with school. And we need, like from grade 1 or grade 4 already, when you're expected to start doing these intensive subjects, there should be a psychologist that sits with every group or every class to educate them on the different types of learning styles and also to kind of help them figure out the type of student they are.
And also who they are mentally.
Who they are mentally,
yeah.
But, man, that shit won't happen.
Come on.
I get it. Yeah. But
the thing is, it's not going to happen because we're expecting people who have had old ideas to implement it. It needs to be us.
Yeah.
I know it's corny, but we are the change we want to be.
Yeah.
It has to be us. I get all complain. I have the intention, Yahore, once I become whatever I'm meant to become, I want to be that person that is you, oh, I'm sorry. I want to be the person that's actually answering some of these questions that I have.
Yeah.
But the point that I wanted to make was, like, for whoever is in power, whoever the forces that be, allowing people to think and giving them the freedom is dangerous to them, because allowing that to happen means that you lose control of the people that you're training, and the people that you're going to employ, you're gonna lose control of them.
There's a system that needs to be broken down,
dismantled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a system.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny about that? We're saying it as if it's something that's yet to happen, but it's already happening.
Looking at
the looting thing that happened in the country, we got tired of a whole lot of things that were happening in this country, a lot of things that were causing us to regress. We got tired and people decided to retaliate, you know, because they saw that the ways that they've been taught to do things are not going to benefit them going forward. Mm. So it's the same with the system. For example, our generation already, we don't think the same ways our parents used to. And the education system is becoming more and more irrelevant as we move forward. Yeah. So they have no choice but to allow us to start thinking for ourselves.
Right.
Because we've reached a point where we're folding our hands. Oh, you're not going to educate me the way I want to? Cool, I'm not gonna be a part of your institution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This was evident even with the fees must fall.
Yes.
You know, it's the same thing that we did. We were like, you're going to give us what we need to, you know, be educated or to become the people we want to be, or else we're going to fold our hands or we're going to revolt.
Because and they looted that shit knowing that the money isn't going to them. The community doesn't own the shops that it has per se. The money is going somewhere else, somewhere that wouldn't benefit the community itself. I'm not talking about these small businesses that people start up. No, that's fine.
Like about Pick and Pay. You're talking about Pick and Pay.
I'm talking about
the established
shops.
Yeah.
The money isn't going to them. And that's why they looted. They were like, fuck you.
It's layered.
Yeah.
There's so many different things.
I'm so glad we could talk about it.
Yeah.
Because I always thought about it, you know, and I'm glad we have this space to talk about it. And yeah, we got to unload a lot today. Got to unpack.
Before we close, can I say something?
Yes.
I always have to be black about things, guys. Dear black people, please start your own institutions.
Yes.
Can we please start educating ourselves?
Let's start thinking.
Start our own curriculums. Ne?
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a blast as always.
It's been.
But,
please share your thoughts with me, please, guys.
Engage with us.
Anyway, yeah, we'd love to know what you think and all of that.
Yeah, your opinions. Engage with us on Twitter. Y'all so dry.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter at
7
underscore podcast. I almost forgot.
Yes.
Fuck.
And then Instagram.
On Instagram at room7
podcast. And then our individual IDs, guys.
We already did in the beginning.
Oh, yeah, we did. Oh, my bad. But yeah, it's been an amazing
session. We plug when we have to. Follow me on Instagram at Save Ryan Wolf. Subscribe to the YouTube channel.
But yeah, that's it. We're signing out. I love you guys, and I'm glad I get to do this with y'all.
Yes, bye. See you in the next episode. You better be there.
Please.
Bye.
Yes, sir.